2 years ago, I had a little activity, which Phil might remember. I've changed it this time in case we had the same people here, because you'd know all the answers. So if you each take a card. Okay. And before I start, what I'd like you to do is have a look at your card. It's double-sided. I'll give you about 5 minutes. See if you can answer either of those problems that are on each side of those cards. There are prizes as well, seasonal prizes. Feel free to use a pen if you need to make notes or affect the puzzles in any way. If you're nearly there but not quite, feel free to collaborate with those next to you. The mini eggs are going unclaimed. Okay, any clues, anyone, for either of them? Anyone got quite there? This first one. Okay, so number C7 we've got here, clued up. Okay, obviously, set of criteria you'll be familiar with are all your kind of essay guidelines that you hand out as a student. Some of them clearly are false, some of them are true. A, C, D, and H are the ones that hopefully you all agree with, perhaps we have a problem. And if you rearrange those into a country, you get Chad. So that's the first answer. I think we managed to get it down here, but we didn't want to go for favoritism or or fix. The other one is the one that really, really foxes the students. It's a bit evil, this one. You've got a range of sources which are largely reliable and largely unreliable, and there's a bit of grey area deliberately there. If you shade out the sources that are reliable, because that's the question, yeah, reliable, question mark, shade those out, and you get the letter N. So the answer is N, or no, for reliable, because it leaves all the ones that aren't inherently reliable. Okay. They're just two examples. Now, to be fair, the students tend to work in groups on that last one. It takes them quite some time, and they have to get pencils out and scribble it. So it's very unfair to give you 3 minutes at the start of a session. That's a little taster of a couple of puzzles we use on the Great History Conundrum, which I'll talk about in a bit more detail as we go on. Some discussion that came up around those puzzles you were looking at just now in the student forums for our course. For the first one, this one's a fairly simple one, of course. It uses a little bit of narrative, gets them into this idea that there's a kind of slight mystery around the items, but essentially it's looking through their handbook and working out what they've got to do when they write an essay. So the students kind of reinforce that. It's helped them reinforce the importance of the handbook, which is the aim of the problem. And then we had some sort of longer, more detailed answers about how this kind of helped them. They kind of ordered things into an order of importance and then selected from there, which is a nice, useful key skill going forward. For the other one, as well as lots of swearing on the forums, we also got things like issues around selecting sites for their reliability. How can you tell whether reliable? So you need to assess such elements as vested interests or expertise or neutrality. All the kind of things we'd like them to be engaging with as historical research students. Okay. But what did come out of that particular puzzle was a lot of discussion around things like Google and YouTube and university sites, and how you can tell whether some things are reliable and some things aren't, and how you can sort of make corroboratory checks to check on that. So that generated quite a lot of very interesting discussion. And that's mainly the focus of the Great History Conundrum, as I'll come to explain, that whilst the puzzles themselves might be kind of almost throwaway, some too cryptic, some too easy, some you might not see the point of, the discussion that follows after them is what kind of makes the course, as I'll come to show you. So quick background about why we set up this course. It was the HS 1000 course, our first year history undergraduate course. Everybody's got one, where you have to teach the skills to progress forward through your 3 years and beyond as a historical student and researcher. We have around 200 first-year undergraduates at Leicester doing the single subject. Back in 2006, we had lots of problems with this course. Students were unmotivated, not turning up, complaining at the staff student committees that it was boring, they already knew what they were learning. But still, at the end of that, they were going into their second year and beyond without those key skills. They hadn't picked them up. Okay, so not motivated, not picking them up. And the aims for the particular course, and these will be familiar with many of you as well, things like where and how to search for historical resources in today's student world, both online and offline. We still want them to go to the library, and that's something that's quite hard to persuade them to do, as you've probably found with your own students. To critically analyse those resources, to collaborate, and this is important with our cohort. With smaller cohorts, the students tend to get to know each other quite quickly. With 200 or so, they all tend to be 200 individuals, unless they know each other right from the start, from halls and so on. So one aim of this course is to try and bring them together in sort of groups of related interest. And finally, to develop some transferable skills as well. Now, we took a quite novel approach to this. We kind of ripped up the whole course, and we looked to a different area to try and get some new ways to look at this particular problem of teaching research skills. I've done quite a bit of research on game-based learning, which is my kind of specialism, and I brought this to the table. We decided to use this as an idea to boost, mainly to boost motivation and engagement, which is what the kind of high outputs from games are, as I've found. We also linked into a growing area of this idea of authentic contexts, and it fits into what George was saying right at the end there, which is this idea of getting students into the mindset of something they're learning about or talking about. And in this case, it's getting into the mindset of a historical researcher. That's what their aim is at the end of their 3 years. To do that, they need to understand the same kind of problems that historical researchers are going to deal with. They need to look at the same methods to approach those problems and the same processes to go through them. They need to use the same tools that historical researchers will use to develop those problems into answers. And they'll develop skills that match those of historical researchers. So this idea that you can create an authentic context where the student is effectively a kind of apprentice or a young historical researcher, and so everything they do is modelling what they would do when they were successful. It's that kind of ladder or that scaffolding of development. And what we came up with after a year of kind of research and pilot testing is a range of problems. We used quite a few of the kind of game-based approaches, such as quite a strong narrative, and we chose a kind of Sherlock Holmes type character solving mysteries, which kind of attracted the students. So in this case, we've got a problem that they've got an extract from the Times in 1911. They have to use the Times online to go back and check the transcription. And in this case, the transcription has been transcribed wrongly, so they need to go and find the mistake, and that gives them the answer. This one is always a nice one. They've got to go to the library to get that, because that's the only place they'll find that book. And on page 10, they'll find Winston Churchill, which is the answer to that puzzle. But that gets them actually physically up from their desk into the library and shows them where the history bookshelves are, which is very useful. To encourage communal participation, we set up kind of paired puzzles or group puzzles. So in this case, you needed to find a partner, another student with the other card, so you could work together to answer that particular problem. And we've got one particularly evil puzzle, which required around 50 students to get together and hand transcribe some early modern English so they could actually find the answer to that particular problem. And we've had students do that every year. In one case, a group of 100 students managed to get themselves organised and split it up into pages to work out. One of the other aims of the programme was to let students work whenever they wanted to. Okay? So as well as giving them problems and puzzles that matched what they would do as a proper historical researcher, we wanted them to be able to access those and answer them anytime they like, because we know that students actually quite like, you know, sort of working in the evening, not getting up until much later in the day, and so on. So what they do is they enter their answer into our web-based system, which works within our VLE. If they get a correct answer, the system will send them their next puzzle, so they get another puzzle to work on straight away, and that works throughout the day or night. So we got quite a few students who would come in at 11 o'clock from the pub, or later, and start to work on puzzles and still be going at 4 or 5 in the morning, as the stats will show us. And they seem to quite like that. Once they've solved a puzzle, they also get a score, which goes directly onto a leaderboard. And that's visible at all times to all students. So the assessment for this course is always obvious. Every student knows what they've obtained, and they can see how far they need to get to achieve 100% in particular areas. That took a lot of arguing to get through the department. We had a lot of discussion about that with staff and with students. And that's the one thing that's been universally liked by everybody, by the students and staff, in the 3 years that we've run. They all like the fact they can see what they're getting, they can see what they're aiming for. And leaderboards are extremely motivating. Anyone who follows kind of football or cricket or rugby tables will know that in itself. You check that every week religiously. As you saw earlier, we also get the students to discuss the problems once they've solved them, and they get further points for that. And this is where we get the kind of critical reflection aspects of the course in. We use postgraduate students to mark the discussion posts because they're kind of closer to the undergraduate students, so tend to work with them better online, but also have that authority. And they work to a rubric which marks their discussions up to 10 points, depending on how reflective or how critical they've been within that answer. And they get their points, again, within 24 hours, they get their points marked straight on our VLE discussion board, so they can see what they've got, and that goes onto the leaderboard and keeps them going. And that combination of kind of instant access, instant feedback in terms of mark, you'll also get some comments from the postgraduates as moderators as well, to tell them how to improve their answers next time. So that constant feedback means that motivation stays very high throughout the 4 weeks of the course. Also, they can specialise, we found, because again, some students will like doing the puzzles, some will hate them. Some students will like doing the discussion, some will hate that. So we made sure we modelled the course so that you could specialise in one or the other. So in this case, points and forum points will both go together to make their grand total or their overall score. So in this case, you can see that the three bottom students there all use different approaches. Some favoured puzzles, some favoured forum points, but they all came out with the same overall mark. The third stage, once they've solved the puzzles and discussed them, is we get them all within groups of 20, so 10 groups of 20, to create a wiki, a shared document, which documents their findings as part of the course. So they in here, they put, in this case, they've annotated a particular question about referencing. So they've indicated where you need to put the various elements within a reference for future use. But they collect together useful sites they've been to, useful approaches, things to be aware of. And that wiki stays open for them for the rest of their course, so they can go back and refer to that in the future. So that becomes their kind of reference guide from the course. And they get a group mark for that. So how's it gone? We've now run it for 3 years. Before we started the project, we had around 65% of students passing that first module, and we had a lot of resits to do in the summer. In the 3 years that it's run, we've had between 90 and 100% pass rate. Now, clearly, there have been changes in the assessment, but largely, the levels are pretty much the same levels of critical analysis, the same amount of writing when you add up the discussion posts and the essays they used to do. And we're coming out at the right, at the sort of much higher pass rates, saving a lot of work in the summer to resit. More importantly, the average pass rate has gone up dramatically. So students who were averaging around a 56% mark or a kind of 2-2-ish level are now up in the firsts, up in the 74s. They're doing around about 18 of the problems each, and they post around 24 times each as well across. So across the 3 years, that's roughly what they've been doing in the forums. And we now find we're doing more work now on progression of that through the years. We've had anecdotal evidence for quite some time that the students are now better in their second year, particularly using referencing and citation, but also in choosing a range of sources. And we're just following that up with some more detailed quantitative work as well at the moment. But we can certainly say that, anecdotally at least, that's improved dramatically in the second and third years going forward. So a quick bit of feedback from those 3 years. One aspect that we wanted to push at was community, as I mentioned. Most of the students, so above 50%, worked communitively or collectively together with other students. You could, if you want to, go through the entire course pretty much on your own until you got to the wiki at the end. And some students decided to do that, so we gave that option. But most students work together. We know that that meant that in some cases, three or four students had worked together on a puzzle, and even if one of them had answered it, they'd all get the points for it. But we accepted that. They all had to discuss properly and originally within the forums to get those points. So overall, any kind of cheating that went on or any sharing unfairly got evened out over time. The other thing which was really good is that around a third of the students claim that they know more people now than they did before the course started. So it's introduced them to more students as they've been going through. In terms of access in the day, I mentioned this before, you can see where they're active. They're certainly not very active in the morning. Towards midday, they sort of get up. And then from that point on, right the way through till around about kind of midnight, 1, 2 in the morning, we're getting people solving puzzles. In terms of access over the 4 weeks, it's fairly constant, but they got a bit of a boost. We sent out a kind of email every Friday to try and chivvy them up, tell them who's at the top of the leaderboard, give them some hints for particular problems, some puzzles, and that had a spike of activity as well. So it kind of kept them going over the 4 weeks. Big hike towards the end because there are grand prizes at the end of the 4 weeks for those who are at the top of the leaderboard in each case. So a bit of qualitative feedback we got, just very briefly. Some of the positive stuff, we got kind of comments like, I worked on this every night for a month willingly, things like that. There was one student who was particularly pleased that they'd solved that puzzle there that we were colouring in. So she and her friend did a little dance around the bedroom, we got told, when they solved that. We also got lots of positive comments about the postgraduates doing the forum marking. That was a really successful part of the course. They felt that they could identify with the postgraduate students really well. The other really positive side that's not mentioned here, as I mentioned, was the assessment, linking the assessment to directly visible assessment as they were going along. The two things that they had problems with, one, which is the expected response, and we're kind of guarding against this all along, which was that a few of the students, mainly the mature students, and only a handful each year out of the 200, but we do get it every year, is that they resent playing a game as part of their course. We do push the kind of academic side of the course when we do the presentations and the opening lectures, but you know, largely, if they're sitting there doing puzzles, some students will feel that's not part of their degree. The other sort of downside was the group wiki. Being group work, the students all hated it, as they always do. As we know, there's not an awful lot you can do about that, because most students, if you ask them again in 3 years' time, will come back and say, the group work was the best part of my degree, but at the time, they all hate it. So we have adjusted the wiki each year, sometimes to give individual marks, sometimes to give group marks, but largely, we still get the same number of complaints from the same amount of students, so I think we're just going to stick with it and see how it goes. And that's it. Thank you very much. Just before we start, Mary, I'll just pass around. There's a set of all the puzzles that we use here, which I'll just pass around so you can have a quick look at them as we're going.
Do you want to know the trivia? Actually, Alex, yes.